And good evening and welcome to Outbeat Collage Out in the Arts. I'm Michaela Kennan here live in the KRCB studios with my co-host Gary Carnevale. We've got Mary Moore Campagna on the engineering boards. We have an exciting chock-full program for you this evening. First up, we will be speaking with Shad Reinstein and Cynthia Stefanoni. They are the organizers of A Day of LGBTQ Films, happening Saturday, February 2nd, right here in Sebastopol. And then we'll have a conversation with Jenny Orvino. She'll be talking about her new book, Poetry, Politics, and Passion. And last but certainly not least, we'll chat with Venus Mayer about how she became known as the singing chiropractor. It's a great evening right here on Outbeat Radio. Do stay tuned. First up, here's Greg Moralia with the Outbeat Radio news and calendar.
Say it, say it, say it. Tell it like it is.
Good evening, this is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio news for Sunday, January 20th, 2013. In the wake of controversy surrounding the exclusion of a lesbian wife from an officer's spouse's club, LGBT advocates are ramping up pressure on the Pentagon to revise guidelines across the military to prohibit discrimination against LGBT service members and their families. Late Tuesday, BuzzFeed reported that the Pentagon announced that it would not intervene in the Army's decision to continue to deny membership to Ashley Broadway, who is married to a female lieutenant colonel stationed at the Fort Bragg Army Base in North Carolina. In sharp contrast, the United States Marine Corps issued guidance last week mandating inclusion for same-sex spouses in an effort to avoid the type of controversy currently boiling over at Fort Bragg. And from Philadelphia, 11-year-old Carolyn Play had been playing football since she was 5 years old. She's always loved the sport, and for the past 2 years, she's been the only girl on the Romans football team organized by the Archdiocese of Philadelphia's Catholic Youth Organization in Doylestown, Philadelphia. But according to an archaic rule from a CYO handbook the Archdiocese conveniently stumbled upon that supposedly says, quote, football is for boys because girls, fragile beings that they are, might get hurt. This season could be the sixth graders' last on the field. The junior varsity defensive end and offensive guard wasn't willing to let the Catholic patriarchy stop her from playing the sport she loves. Carolyn's mother created a petition on change.org calling for the diocese to end its discrimination and allow girls to play football. That petition now has more than 68,000 signatures, including that of Ellen DeGeneres, who had the young girl on her show this week. Here's a bit of their conversation.
I mean, it's really incredible. You're changing a lot of people's minds because a lot of girls do like football, and it's a very rough sport. It's a dangerous sport. Yeah. But what do you like so much about football?
Well, the one thing I like about it a lot is that my teammates and I were like one big family. Mm-hmm. They're like my brothers, and I can count on them. They can count on me. Mm-hmm. And clearly, I like the contact.
Uh huh.
That's just fun. Like,
when you say contact, you mean hitting people.
Yes, like a lot of little kids want to go out and just hit somebody, so that's fun.
That's one way to hit somebody. It's a game.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so and all of a sudden now you've been playing. Somebody must have said something because all of a sudden out of nowhere there's some outdated rule that says it's boys only and you may not get to play next season. Is that right?
Yeah. My parents found out about that, and I found out about it at the end of the season, and I was just really angry because they let me play, and they didn't realize that I was a girl, and now they're just telling me, you know, you're not allowed to play anymore. Like, it's just not fair.
Are the guys trying to help you, or your teammates, your family that you just called them, are they on your side saying, let's, you know, make sure that you get to play next year?
Yeah, of course. They're all signing my petition on change.org, and they're all just being really supportive with it.
Well, I signed it as well. First thing I heard about, you know, when I saw it last week, and I said, let's have her on the show, and I signed the petition, and we're going to try to get more signatures, so we're going to put a link on our website. So if you want to help her be able to play, everybody go to the website, sign this petition.
Now here's your calendar of events for the coming week. On Monday, January 21st, and every Monday at 5:30 p.m., the Petaluma Health Center will host an LGBTQ support group at 1179 North McDowell Boulevard in Petaluma in the Serenity Room. This group is for all who identify as LGBT or who are questioning their sexuality and or gender. Everyone is welcome to join the support group, make new friends, and help build community. And on Tuesday, January 22nd at 7 p.m., a new volunteer orientation will happen at Food for Thought, Sonoma County AIDS Food Bank, 6550 Railroad Avenue in Forestville. And also on Tuesday from 1:30 to 3:30 p.m., the Santa Rosa Senior Group will meet at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation's Glacier Center in Santa Rosa. And also on Tuesday at 6:30 p.m., the Transgender North Bay Group will meet at the Positive Images Center, 312 Chin Street in Santa Rosa. And on Wednesday, January 23rd, from 5 to 6:30 p.m., the Youth Support Group will convene at the Spectrum LGBT Center, 30 North San Pedro Road, Suite 160 in San Rafael. And on Thursday, January 24th at 6:30 p.m., the Men's Peer-to-Peer HIV Support Group will gather at Face-to-Face, 873 2nd Street in Santa Rosa. And finally, on Sunday, January 26th at 8 p.m., our close friend and ally, singer-songwriter Randy Driscoll, will be performing live with Tim Flannery, the third base coach for the Giants, in a concert in Napa at the Uptown Theater benefiting Brian Stowe. You can learn more at uptowntheaternapa.com. If you have news or an event you'd like to share with our listeners, tell us about it by going to our new website at outbeatnews.com. And stay connected with us all week long on Facebook and Twitter for the latest LGBT news from the North Bay and beyond. For Gary Carnevale, I'm Greg Moralia. Now back to Outbeat Collage with Gary Carnevale and Michaela Kennan.
A Day of LGBTQ Films will happen Saturday, February 2nd, at the Sebastopol Center for the Arts, 282 South High Street in Sebastopol. The program will feature the documentary Vito, which is about film historian and AIDS activist Vito Russo, Trans, a feature documentary about what it feels like to be transgender in our culture, and Cloudburst, a beautiful lesbian love story starring Olympia Dukakis. The event, the first of its kind here in the North Bay, is the brainchild of Shad Reinstein and Cynthia Stefanoni.
That's a great name, Cynthia.
Thank you very much.
Welcome to Outbeat Collage.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Talk to us a little bit about your decision to organize this whole Day of LGBTQ Films.
Well, we would go down to San Francisco to the Frameline Gay Film Festival, and we'd see all these great films, and we'd come back and talk about them, and everyone would go, well, how are we going to see them? And we were involved with the Center for the Arts and just said, well, let's just do it. It was, you know, it's been work, but it's been a lot of fun work.
It's been great. It's also been time for this to happen up here.
Absolutely.
Has anything like that been done up here before?
Not that I know of, but I'm relatively new here.
And I'm very old, and I'm not aware of it either.
Okay.
Right. Since we lost the Rialto, which used to show more LGBT films, you know, for a full week or a few weeks, there really haven't been very many shown in the North Bay. I think even the Rialto in Sebastopol hasn't been showing as many. Just seems like to me.
Well, I don't know. I haven't paid that much attention to the programming, but I do know that when we presented this, we went to the director of film programming at the Sebastopol Center for the Arts. They were very welcoming. We both work with the DocFest, as it's called, Shad and I. And so we went to Jason Perdue, the director of film programming, pitched our idea, and he said, I don't know, it's awfully quick to get another film festival together. And so we looked at each other and very quickly said, how about one day of films? Just this year, we will curate it. You don't need to get on a huge bandwagon for it, but we'll get the ball rolling. If we can make that fly, what do you think?
And the films that we chose are all top-notch films. They're the films that if you go to the big gay film festivals in New York, Seattle, San Francisco, they're the opening and closing night films that you'd end up spending a lot of money. And we went, we want to start this. We want to start it with a bang. We want to show that we're bringing in the top quality films. And so we did it.
I've seen two of the three of the films, and they're wonderful. Talk about the three films and what they have to offer.
Well, we started looking initially because we came from the DocFest. Do we just want to be another documentary film festival? And we looked at each other and said, no. There are some great narrative films being done. And Shad and her partner Jody had been to Frameline. And Cloudburst was huge there. So, and I have worked with Olympia Dukakis in the past, so I would go walk anywhere to see Olympia in something. So that was our narrative choice, and we chose it to close our day of film.
Cloudburst is about a couple who have been together forever in Maine, and one of them gets put in a nursing home, retirement home, and they escape and do a road trip to Nova Scotia to get married. So I call it the Thelma and Louise of the lesbian Thelma and Louise
for the senior group.
The senior, exactly. Senior. Right. And it's a great narrative film. It's funny, it's touching, it's warm, it's the performances are astounding. It's Brenda Fricker.
Right.
Who most people will recognize.
And then, how can you not love Olympia Dukakis from, Tales of the City?
Mrs. Madrigal.
Yeah, among many other things.
Right,
the woman
right.
is just amazing.
And then Trans is a new film. It came out too late to be in the Frameline this past year. It'll probably be in next year. It's one of the best transgender films that I've seen. It covers a number of different people, from a young child who is transitioning in elementary school with the help of their parents, to a woman who starts out as a 20-something butch lesbian, and you see her go through the process of making that decision, going to her first transgender conference. Mm. You see older male-to-female transgender people who are actually going through the operation, and you're in the operating room with them. And then you have the transgender doctor who started out in the military as a man and is now a woman who specializes in transgender operations. And so you're going through all of the different emotional and physical issues that people have to deal with and how they are related to in society, as well as how they're, what they're going through personally.
And it's an amazing, not just an amazing film as a documentary, but and because of the scope, the breadth of the community, it really addresses it addresses the issue from many, many points of view, and many people. So that was a shoo-in for us. We loved it. And to our surprise and delight, the director will be with us for a Q&A afterwards. And the transgender community is very excited.
Excellent.
Well, and that leads me into a question of, first of all, Shad, you're on the steering committee of the Sebastopol Documentary Film Festival. But how do you go about getting the rights to show these films, obtaining the films, choosing the films?
With this one, because we were only going to do three films, it was much easier. Because we went through some of the catalogs and went, what are the ones that really stand out that we saw? And then you end up going to the distribution company. And Trans was one that was just sent to us it was the same distribution company as Vito. Vito is the third film that we're showing, and that's going to start off the morning at noon. And it's a film on the AIDS activist Vito Russo, who was involved early in gay rights, went on to do all of the research for Celluloid Closet and Gays in Hollywood. And it's just an amazing documentary that's well worth seeing.
And I think even if you have seen Vito, particularly if you've seen Vito on a small screen in your living room, there's nothing like seeing things like this on a huge screen, which, by the way, at the Art Center in Sebastopol, we will be the first group to use the new screening system there. And it is a huge screen. I think it's, 16 by 20, something like that. Yeah. It's very, very large, and it proves to be, what I've seen on it, it's just magnificent.
How many seats are in the space?
There's about between 150 and 200. We can, if we're selling out, we'll push more chairs in to get more people in. We will try and not push turn anyone away. You can get the tickets at Brown Paper Tickets or by calling the Sebastopol Center for the Arts. We're charging $10 a piece for the show, or you can buy a day pass, which allows you to go to all three films for $25.
And the thing with the day pass is that there are various vendors in Sebastopol that are whose ears are perking up. They want to support us. We already have at least one of the coffee people in town offering 15% off of any coffee drink to any day pass holder.
Nice.
That's excellent. So how are you promoting this? How will people find out about the festival?
Well, you can check gaysonoma.com. Has a nice big ad out there.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Thank you. Thank you for the plug.
We have flyers up all over, you know, all over, more up around Santa Rosa and Guerneville and Sebastopol, that area. We are trying to get them down into the Sonoma part of the county. And, you know, we're putting PSAs in newspapers, that type of thing.
It's also on the Sebastopol Documentary Film Festival website. So you can check that way. And the phone number at the Sebastopol Center for the Arts is 707-829-4797.
Very good.
And speaking of the Documentary Film Festival, the 6th annual fest is coming up March?
In March 20, the weekend of March 21st to 23rd.
And you're also responsible for some wonderful LGBT programming.
There's going to be two LGBT films there. The program will be coming out on February 9th, exactly, but there'll be two international docs on gay people, one about Palestinian gay men in Israel. That is an amazing film.
It's astounding.
The intimacy and the openness of these Palestinian gay men talking about their issues and what it takes to be gay in that culture and then to be a Palestinian man in Israel, you know, in a gay, is just amazing. And then the second film is Tales of the Warrior, which is about a group of, well, technically they're not transgender because they don't ever change their body because they're Muslim. They're from Indonesia. But they live and function as women and have and are second wives to a heterosexual couple. And it's a large community and subculture that's traditional in Indonesia.
They sound fascinating. They sound fascinating. And coming right here to Sonoma County.
The world is marching in.
LGBT world. Shad and Cynthia, thank you for joining us tonight. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Best of luck with the festival. We'll see you there.
Thank you.
And at LGBTQ Day of Films. A Day of LGBT Films. Okay, we'll be right back with poet and activist Jenny Orvino after this little musical break. Bob Mould was American punk's strongest voice as the lead singer of Husker Du. It took him years after the band broke up for him to come out as gay. Last year, he released a great memoir that describes that process as well as most of his life. Last month, he released his latest solo effort, Silver Age. Here is Bob Mould with First Time Joy.
Children, we were so afraid. We built this dream. We built this dream. We built this dream. Yeah.
Poet and activist Jenny Orvino is the author of several books, including her latest, Poetry, Politics, and Passion. It's a wonderful collection of poems and personal essays. Her spoken CD, Make Love, Not War, explores the body erotic and the body politic. Body politic. I love that. Jenny's work has appeared in many North Bay publications, and her spoken word performances have been featured at various events. Jenny, welcome to Outbeat Collage.
Thank you very much.
It's refreshing to encounter an artist who doesn't shy away from two subjects that are still, for the most part, hot-button issues in mainstream American art, politics and sexuality. These are the very areas you tackle with your new collection. Why is it important for artists to delve into these subjects?
Well, you know, I think a lot of what we see in media is pretty distorted, especially in terms of respect for women. For example, the reason I started writing erotica myself is because my ex-husband wanted to watch pornography on occasion, and I just could not stand it because I just didn't think there was anything, nothing in that turned me on. And I thought I would like to write what I thought was sensual and erotic. And so I wasn't finding it, so I thought, well, I should write some. Now, it's true that there are people who write beautiful literary erotica, and I'm not claiming that, but at least that's what made me start to write about it. And I also think that if people are a little bit more in touch with their bodies and in touch with the pleasure principle, I think that probably we wouldn't have so much violence.
I think you're probably right on that. Absolutely. So your first collection, Like a Tree, was published in 1969. And as most of us know, that was the era of the sexual revolution, war protests, the whole explosion of the feminist and the LGBT movements. How did all of that shape your life and then ultimately your work?
Well, I was in college. I graduated in 1968. So that was the summer of love. That was Vietnam, anti-Vietnam War protests were happening on campus, Kent State killings. There was so much happening at the time. And I went to graduate school, or started graduate school in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And shortly thereafter, I dropped out of school to work on the Defense Committee of the Milwaukee 14, who were activists from the church. Some of them were, my background was Catholic, radical Catholic. Some priests, lay people who burned draft files as a protest, stood, waited to be arrested, and knew they were going to jail. So these were the kind of people that I hung around with. These were people who felt that nonviolent civil disobedience was the way to get a message across. Okay, so as 1970 turned, I think the years from 1970 to 75, 76, I changed more than I changed from the age of zero to five. Mm. Because, you know, I graduated from college. I ended up getting married. Well, getting pregnant, getting married, getting divorced, and, you know, becoming a single mother, all in this short period of time. And I think my childbirth experience was the first one that had me understand that women's control over their bodies, their reproduction, their childbirth, was like the core of feminism. And it was a time when there were labels all over the place. You know, you were a hawk or a dove. You were a gay or straight. You were reactionary or revolutionary. And it was like, you know, what's my title, you know? And coming out of the anti-war movement, I thought, well, radical. You know, I was a radical. But then feminism. So I became a radical feminist, I guess. And it was much nicer than a women's libber or a bra burner, which is what they were calling us. You know, so that was the label I ended up giving myself at the time.
And I love that term, radicalized, how people are radicalized. I don't think people think that much about that anymore, and think about how that was a coming of age for so many people in so many different points of time. I mean, you know, in America, we just think, oh, it happened there in the late 60s to the early 70s. But throughout history, throughout the world, people were radicalized because they were fighting for civil rights.
And experiences that happened because of your convictions. You know, it's nothing like getting arrested and getting your head beat in that's going to change your opinion about some things.
Right, right. And too few people seem to be at that point today. When you speak to people of our generation, you know, they had been through that. They had been through these movements, you know, or ACT UP, you know, with the AIDS crisis. And they were really fighting for their lives. That seems to be lost in modern culture, at least in this country. I mean, certainly around the world, other people are.
Well, you know, I think the artists were way ahead of things. You know, like in 1969, there was a group, and I was close to these folks. There were some gay men. They were called Les Petits Bonbons. and they did street theater. They did male art. They did their acting out, acting up, was in the realm of art.
Right.
They weren't out in the streets demonstrating, but they were doing it through art. And I thought, okay, poetry, song. I mean, again, in the anti-war movement, a lot of my friends were musicians. And, you know, we would have an anti-war rally or, you know, I remember the Great American Smoke-In in Milwaukee, and the band played. And it's like when the cops come in and the tear gas smoke is being mixed with the marijuana smoke, you know, but they were still on the bandstand.
Wow.
You know, I mean, so those,
right.
So I always felt like, oh, I'm going to go for the activism that has a lot of fun involved. You know, Gary and I joke, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. That was my series, but you know, we weren't total hedonist. I mean, we had a conscience.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about the kind of the resurrection of a documentary that you actually produced some 30 years ago entitled Lives 1, 2, 3, 4. And you and Gary are kind of reworking that now. But talk about the film and what relevance it has to today's issues, really.
Well, you know, when I was writing about it and thinking about it, I thought, well, that was like reality TV at the time, because I went to a film school workshop, and they called it self-referential film at the time. But I brought home the video equipment that I had borrowed from the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, where I had worked for 6 months, and I ended up being able to take the equipment home for the summer. And I had the camera on for 8 weeks out of my life, and just whatever was happening at the time. And so it turned out that so many issues came up in that period of time, so that, you know, when you're putting together a documentary, you've got to find the thread and find, you know, what is the story here? And there were so many things that interlocked. At the time, the woman that I was living with was in a custody battle for her son. Because he didn't feel like he should be living with a lesbian. We were involved in International Women's Day March and the Women's History Movement. We were also dealing with issues of creativity and writing and all our angst around writing and what our artistic careers were about. And I had some issues with my little daughter's father. So all those things came together in that plus, you know, relationships, fighting, you know, I have some really great fights, real sex in this video. So I don't know. I just felt now that I think about it, kind of a little ahead of my time there in terms of what's being shown on TV now. And, you know, I don't know if we have the technology to make this thing publishable or broadcastable or whatever, but it was just nice to feel like it could be taken off that VHS tape and actually put on a disc, and maybe it'll be part of my resume, part of my background.
Part of the ultimate.
You know, part of the ultimate legacy, yes, right.
Well, that was a non-religious miracle in itself that we could capture anything from that
30-year-old videotape.
Videotape. Well, that was
Well, I don't know if the VHS was that. It started on reel-to-reel. So.
Yeah. Still quite old.
Quite old. Due to Gary's excellent skills in the studio.
Thank you. We're also working on a short film of you, this is my term, performing your personal essay, A Face of Ecstasy, which describes your participation in the film Orgasm, The Faces of Ecstasy. Tell us about your experience and what prompted you to write about it.
Okay, so we're in the middle of the Iraq debacle, and I get this video email that says, we're going to make a videotape of people, just their faces. We're not showing anything but close-ups of faces. We want people who are willing to be filmed during sexual arousal. And I go, this is a very interesting diversion. I could participate. They're looking for some older people. They wanted a whole diversity of people. And so I thought, that sounds like a charming diversion from worrying about what's going on in the world. So I signed up to be part of this documentary. And it was an experience of, we were interviewed first. We were filmed in facial close-up during sexual arousal. We had orgasms. I don't know what you can say. one person at a time. I mean, somebody said, you wrote an essay about this and now you're going to read it on YouTube. Are you nuts? And I think, you know, maybe I am, but there is a reason that I did it. And I say it in the film. There are so few images of real beautiful sexuality. And there's so many images of violence and torture and murder and mayhem. It's just constant. But yet, we cannot see a bare breast on television. We cannot see a woman having a real orgasm, a man having a real orgasm. It's just not, this is such a no-no. But yet, how many hours of murder do children see? But they don't see any. So, and then, as I said, it's just something to wave the flag about, all this violence, but yet we can't talk about sexuality. And so I just felt like it was important to, just the same, for the same reason I wanted to write my own erotica that I felt was feminist and respectful and not violent and not exploitative, same reason to do the orgasm video, is that this is what it looks like. Here's a black person, a white person, a transgender person, a deaf guy, a fat girl, an older man, an older woman, all this variety. And what do we all have in common? You know, it is just this human vulnerability, this bliss, this. I just admired the people so much who participated in this because they were so willing to show their vulnerability. And you know, when I read this essay that's in my book, it's called A Face of Ecstasy, and it's about the whole process of participating, I had a person in the audience come up to me and said, I didn't feel embarrassed, I didn't feel like a voyeur, I felt like you were sharing a profound experience that you had, and I felt like I was your girlfriend, your intimate.
Hmm.
So what can I say? That's the story of A Face of Ecstasy. Soon to be on YouTube.
Talk to us just very quickly about the CD, Make Love, Not War.
I have many friends who are musicians, as I said, and I've also had many wonderful teachers. I was really, inspired by the tradition of the beatniks, really, who used to read poetry in coffee houses to the accompaniment of bongo drums and sometimes guitars, or they have a stand-up bass or something. And I thought, poetry is meant to be with music, you know, but I can't sing worth a darn. And actually, my ex-husband had a band called the Poetry Section, and he would read poetry and they would play. And so I thought, I could do that, you know. So I decided to call in all my favors and have my musician friends come into the studio. And they, you know, some people locally, Dave McNabb, wonderful jazz musician, John Simon did some work for me, Roxanne Oliva, the Accordion Babes Calendar cover girl, is on my CD. And so my friends came into the studio, and we just made this spoken word and music CD. And, you know, I think poetry should have music accompaniment, and so I wanted to do that.
What words of advice do you have for fellow poets, writers, maybe people who are struggling, who are a bit blah, who want to say something but are having trouble?
Well, write in a diary. That's one thing that I do. I've been writing in a diary since I was 14 years old. And even if you never do anything with it, just the fact that you have practice in writing. I mean, they talk about writing practice. All these gurus have written all these wonderful books. Writing practice, you know. Julia Cameron, that creativity book. Natalie, what's her name? Can't think of her book right at the moment, sorry. But writing practice, writing exercises, just self-expression, practicing in self-expression. And so I would say, just, you know, write in a diary. Take a class. I have been so inspired by the poetry teachers that I've had. David St. John, fabulous teacher locally. Richard Speaks at the JC. I've had a lot of really great and inspiring teachers. And sometimes just going to a class and hanging out with other writers will really get you going, you know, and you start feeling community. We have a fabulous literary community in Sonoma County. And that has really helped.
Well, the title of your book, Poetry, Politics, and Passion, really kind of says it all. And the beauty of us sitting here in the studio is that I can see the passion in your expression and feel it coming from you. The words you've written in here are your truth, and that is always the artist's way. And I thank you for honoring that and for listening to that muse, because you have a powerful message of authenticity and realness to offer the reader and to offer those of us who come to know you. So I very much appreciate that. How can we get a copy of not only the Poetry, Politics, and Passion, but the Make Love, Not War CD?
Well, you can go to my website, jennyarvino.com, and you can get in touch with me that way. The local bookstores, Copperfields in Healdsburg and the Share Exchange, has my book. You know, I don't know, the CD now is, it was 2002, so I guess you'd have to contact me. I've got boxes of them under my bed.
Eliminate the middleman.
That's right. Boxes under my bed. I'm ready to go.
And it's Jenny Orvino, and it's O-R-V-I-N-O.
Correct. J-E-N-N-I-E.
It's a very Italian night.
100%. I'm 100% Italian.
There you go.
Oh, and it comes through.
Thank you for joining us tonight, Jenny.
You're welcome.
We wish you the very best in your creative and activist adventures. Next up is singer, writer, and healer, Venus Mayer. First, we'll have a listen to another track from Bob Mould's Silver Age. This is Star Machine.
Silly virgin.
Venus Maher, is it Maher?
Maher.
Maher, Venus Maher, has come to be known as the singing chiropractor because she sometimes will sing to her patients at her Cotati office. She also provides comfort to terminally ill patients as a member of the Threshold Choir. One of Venus's short stories can be found in Call of the Wild, an anthology by the local group Redwood Writers. We welcome Venus.
Thank you, Gary.
So talk about your decision to not only become a chiropractor, but then building your practice and then ultimately bringing music into the healing process.
I chose to become a chiropractor at the age of 18, having dropped out and joined the women's Back to the Land movement. I realized I'd dropped out and I wanted to come back and join back in. And a woman chiropractor had helped me when I hurt my back at 15. When I started my own practice, what I wanted to do was I wanted to bring people the reminder of their own health that I believe is intrinsic to all of us. And I wanted to find things that match my heart in doing that. And one of the things that matches my heart is to bring song into the healing process when it's appropriate.
And you're involved with Doctors with a Heart. Tell us about that.
That's something else that matches my heart. Doctors with a Heart was started in 1986 by a dentist in Iowa. And he said, why don't we do what we do well on certain days and do that for free, but take donations for a local project, such as the food bank or the homeless shelter. I've been doing this for over 20 years, and usually 2 to 3 times a year, and we've raised an average of $600 to $1,000 each time, and also awareness for each project.
Wow.
It's really exciting.
For 10 years, the Threshold Choir has been comforting terminally ill patients with music. It has grown to an international organization of more than 100 choirs. These must be very emotional and rewarding, in a sense, performances for you as a singer. Tell us about the choir, your place within the group, and what it means for you to offer such comfort.
Well, this choir was started almost 13 years ago now. Actually, it's even more time, by Kate Munger. And it started with her singing to one friend who was struggling with life and death, and it's grown as this way because it is so powerful. We come by invitation only to someone's bedside, invited by them or their family in a home or hospital setting. Usually there'll be just 3 or 4 people, members of the choir, singing a melody, a high harmony, low harmony. And I will give you an example of something that we sing that always moves my heart and usually brings tears to the eyes of those involved. It's something to bring comfort, and I will say that I always feel I'm so honored to be present. We receive just as much as we give. So this is an example. You have to imagine the high and low harmonies. My grateful heart, so filled with years of living, memories flow by me like petals on a stream. My grateful heart forgives so many sorrows, brings peace that lasts forever, illuminates the dream.
It's lovely. That's lovely.
And we have a repertoire of over 400 songs, and we sing, as I said, when asked, always by invitation. If someone is interested, there's a website, thresholdchoir.org, in either singing with us or being sung to. It is for both thresholds of life, newborns and those struggling with life on the other end. But we sing more on the later end than the first end.
Talk to us a little bit about expeditionary learning and the CDs that you released.
Thank you. Expeditionary Learning is a middle school that is through the public school here in Rohnert Park. It is a special magnet program, and they take 10 to 12 major field trips a year, and the students are 12, 13, and such. And I volunteered to teach music and songwriting with the students for 2 years running, and we created a CD of the songs they wrote and I wrote. It was a wonderful experience for me and for them. It was a voluntary class, so I could find out if I was doing well as a teacher because they didn't have to be there. And when I first started, I called a friend who teaches music, Karen Drecker, and I said, how do you do this? How do you bring songwriting to life? And she said, well, I personally bring a magic wand, and I touch each person. So I went around the room, and I thought they're either going to laugh me out of the room or they're going to accept it. And I touched each one, and one said, you touched me twice. I'm double magic. And one said, you missed me. Get me. So the students really, when I said, this means you're creative. I said, I'm actually not creating it. It's within you. So they believed me. They wrote songs. We had a lot of time and music donated, and we created two CDs, which is the students singing their songs. It's powerful.
Mm. Where can we obtain copies of those?
You can contact my office. I have them. They're $10, and 100% of that goes to the program. You can also contact Expeditionary Learning, but I haven't warned them about this, so contact me first. But we have CDs up for the children. Okay. It's especially good for middle school students, but for anyone. It's encouraging music.
Nice. Talk about your story in Call of the Wild.
Well, I've been writing for about 7 years, and the story that's in the Call of the Wild is called In the Beginning. It is the origin myth for the shapeshifter time travel novel I've been working on. I just broke 100,000 words, and I cannot tell you when it'll be published, but I'm definitely in second draft.
Nice.
And I didn't tell you that I have a CD of my own called When Do We Laugh that I put out in 2000, and it's the best 11 love songs of the 80 I'd written to that point. All love songs, but none to a partner. To my mother who passed, my inner child. My son thought it was for him. I never had the heart to tell him when he was little. It was the inner child in me.
Tell us a little bit about your family.
I have a partner, Sue, of 12 years, and a son who's 17 and about to go off to college. And we are blessed to have created a home in the country in the last 3 years together. I'm really happy and blessed. Every day my gratitude list is long, but it starts with family and spirit.
Is your son a creative person?
He's creative in football. He just got a scholarship to Sacramento, half scholarship to Sacramento State.
Wow.
He's very creative in sports.
Big football day. I bet it's a big day for him.
Big day for him.
Did you all watch the game?
Yes. He watched with his friends. We watched, the teens and the adults. But
it's always fun when the home team wins.
Yes.
Go Niners.
Really?
I was born and raised in San Francisco, so I am a Niner by, by birth.
Let's get so much to cover, Venus. My goodness. But let's not skip over your novel. Talk about
yes, the writing. It's woven, written in between all of these other things. But really what happened is I started writing and the story's been leading me. And I finally got the entire first draft about 2 years ago. And now I've been learning. And this is the book I'm learning how to write on. Mm. What I find is the characters have a lot to say. And they are rather demanding. And I always love that story when people say, well, why did you call them Wilma? Well, because that's their name. And that's how I feel. These characters know exactly what they're... For instance, they're winged creatures who follow their compassion to humans who need them through time and space. One of them ends up at a green swath cut through a city, lands in Golden Gate Park in 1970s with someone having a drug overdose. He tries to help him, ends up getting in recovery himself. So there's a lot of parts to the story. Some of which I had no idea were coming.
Wow. Lots of research? Or?
Sometimes, for instance, one chapter is in the Japanese-American internment camps, and I found that I got so deep in the research. It's only one chapter. I read 6 books, and I said, I'll never finish the book at this rate. I have to leave research, go back to writing. But most of it is the imagination, and my subconscious is really quite creative, more than I even knew. I find that chiropractic, healing, music, art all come together in the place where I listen. For instance, when I'm a chiropractor, when I'm touching someone's back, it'll tell me, yes, push here, don't you dare go over here, right, left. Mm. I'm guided by being present and being aware. The same thing happens in music. So if I'm in the right place, it almost feels like I'm on pitch, in harmony. I'm there. I'm present. And if, for instance, I might touch someone's left knee, it says, yes, please. And the right knee says, don't you dare. Mm. So it's really important to listen in writing, in music, and in healing. And in chiropractic, that's how I listen. When I'm in a room with someone, I might need to just listen to them. They might need a song. One patient says, you know, my neck never adjusts unless you sing to me. So it depends on the person and what they need. It's about them. It's not about me.
Hmm. It's about you being a channel, though.
Yes.
And it's about you listening and allowing that to flow through you.
It is. When I first began to be a chiropractor, I used to think, well, you followed these routines. And then what you find is those guide you at first, but then you follow what the body's asking for. It's really important to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I do want to mention that we're doing Doctors with a Heart this coming month, February. This is for a benefit for COTS. COTS is helping the homeless here in Roanoke Park and in Petaluma. They're incredible. And so anyone who wants to come in can have free chiropractic care. And that is throughout February. History exam and first treatment are free. But we'll take a donation for COTS, gratefully, whatever amount. It's about $110 value, whatever amount someone wants to give. And I'd like people to know about COTS and Doctors with a Heart.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for that work and for letting us know. Give us your website one more time and how people can.
Yes, so the best way to reach us is by phone, 792-0202. That's Maher Chiropractic. The website is maherchiro.com. And we welcome anyone who wants to talk about expeditionary learning, COTS, Threshold Choir, Doctors with a Heart, or a singing chiropractic.
It's the clearinghouse. Excellent.
In between patients.
Right.
I'll call you back. Or my staff will help.
Formal musical training? Or
seat of my pants. I really have been writing songs. I do have to give credit to Tony. When I was 13, Tony taught five of us six chords and said, you can write music. And we believed him. So we started writing songs. And I've been writing ever since. So I give Tony credit for opening the door. And really just what comes through is a miracle.
And let me just ask, with respect to your chiropractic work, why would someone come to you as a therapist?
The primary reason is because I listen with both my mind to their history and their words and with my hands and heart to their body, and I don't force anything. I always listen. That's probably the most important reason. I have special training in craniosacral, in pediatrics, in women's health, in sports medicine. But because I listen, I don't have to follow a routine. I can do what they need. And I'll sing to them if it's appropriate.
Good. Good. And for those, we asked Jenny about this as well, but for those who may not quite know how to get in touch or to open themselves up or relax enough to become the channel, what suggestions or advice do you offer that person?
What I have found is that what gets in the way is my ego. I'm afraid of failure, afraid of success, afraid of not knowing. And so when I consider it play instead of work, when I allow myself to be a beginner in the beginner's mind, that's when, you know, when I start to think, I'm a novel writer, I'm almost done with the novel, I freeze up. But if I think, I'm going to go listen to my characters and see what they have to say, that's fun. When I go to write a song, if I put any pressure on what it's supposed to be, when I walk in with a patient, I try not to assume anything. At that point, it's allow it to be play, listen, be a beginner, and start fresh again, like my son taught me when he was little.
Wonderful.
Great advice.
Wonderful. And again, how can we contact you?
The best way is to give us a call at 792-0202, or you can check our website, maherchiro.com, and we're in Cotati right across from Oliver's if you want to stop by.
Excellent. And it's M-A-H-E-R.
That's correct. Correct, like your ma's or her.
Very good. Well, thank you. Certainly wish you all the very, very best. And thank you for all the good work that you do. Want to just extend our appreciation for coming and being with us tonight on Collage. Also to Jenny Orvino, to Shad Reinstein, and to Cynthia, the organizers of next month's Day of LGBTQ Films. Everybody is doing great, great work in our community. Sonoma County is such a rich community with a lot of people who are working both in front and behind the scenes for some very important causes. So
that is the truth.
Thank you.
Thank
you. Good.
Want
to invite everybody to listen to Outbeat Radio every Sunday night, 8 p.m. right here on KRCB. Next week, it's Greg Moralia and Jeff Basham with the Outbeat News In-Depth. Gary, Mary, and I will return next Sunday, February 17th with Outbeat Collage. That time, our guests will be Emily Webster. She's organizing an LGBT seniors dance. And Renetta James, she is producing the Occidental Center of the Arts' new Friday night film series coming up very soon. Once again, thank you all for listening. From all of us here at Outbeat Radio and KRCB, we do wish you the very best in the new year, and we'll see you next time.